You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Here it is. There's that wonderful sound. Kicking off your Saturday morning edition of Roto Experts in the Morning. I'm Mike Blewett along with George Kurtz, and we'll take you through the NFL landscape for the next 2 hours. We're going to talk a little bit outside the NFL today as we turn the page from the fantasy season in 2017. We'll do some reviews today of what where we went right, where we went wrong, and some of the other things that we can maybe look forward to next year. We'll have a little bit of fun with it. We'll have Gary Davenport on at 9 o'clock, so a lot to go over. We'll start to transition into baseball today and moving forward. George and I will be here each and every Saturday. We'll be doing Sundays as well as we transition away from an NFL, a sort of standard NFL game day show that happens in the morning. So feel free to listen to us each and every day on the Fantasy Sports Network. George, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, Michael. You know, getting ready for the playoffs start today. We got the fantasy, we got some fantasy playoffs people might be playing in today.
We do. I'm in the midst of putting together some lineups there. I have both an IDP lineup where we do two and done, so you can use players twice throughout the entire playoffs. And there's another one I'm looking at joining, which is a one and done. So you get to use players one time. There's a real strategy to that because obviously you have to try to save players. George, I know we've done that in the past at our previous broadcasting stop. We had typically with all the hosts at Sirius, we put together a one and done league. And the tricky part there obviously is that you can't be left without players at a certain position when you get there. So explain a little bit about how that might work.
Yeah, correct. One and done, obviously, done with them. So you sort of want to pick your matchups here. But you got to be careful. I mean, I think in playoff leagues, Mike, how I like to approach it is I want to map out who I think is going to win each game. I got to trust my analysis. So today I think Houston's going to beat Oakland. I think something like I think Seattle will beat Detroit. I think Green Bay and Giants is close to a toss-up, but I got Green Bay ahead there. And then on Sunday, the last guy, I got Pittsburgh beating Miami. So I'm going to look at the losing teams. I think they're going to lose. I think they're going to be done. It doesn't mean today that I want to start Crabtree and Cooper because I don't think Oakland can score a point. Or maybe it'll be under 10. It won't be a lot. So I'm going to throw those guys out. But maybe I want to use Ajayi tomorrow because I think he's done. He's one and done anyway, so I might as well use him while I have him. I think you're looking at strategy like that.
Yeah, and an interesting guy in that type of strategy, and I think somebody that you're looking to, and I think that's the proper way to explain it. You have to look at the losing teams first and decide if there's a player amongst those losing teams that you think could go off today but still lose, or this weekend rather, and still lose. And I think the guy that you're really going to look at hard is Odell Beckham. I think that Giants-Packers game, everybody would agree, is the tightest of all the matchups this weekend. I don't think anybody would be stunned with no matter which team wins. Aaron Rodgers playing his tail off, but the Giants' defense obviously has been extremely efficient throughout the year, getting people off the field on third down. And they played a tight game in Green Bay several months ago. So Odell's the type of guy who could go for double-digit catches, he could get over 100 yards, he could get multiple touchdowns, and they can conceivably still lose.
Yeah, I think what you're looking at here is it's going to be cold tomorrow in Green Bay, somewhere around 10, 12 degrees. No precipitation, so no snow, but it's going to be a little chilly. That probably plays off a Giants' hand somewhat, although Aaron Rodgers generally doesn't really have a problem throwing the ball in any kind of weather, so I'm not all that worried about it. But it should be a good game. I think it's the marquee game of the weekend. It's the one game, as I said, it really could go one way or the other. My only problem with the Giants is this. They got to score points. They're not playing teams that are only going to score in the 14 to 17-point range. Green Bay's going to score 20, at least 20, I would think. So the Giants got to score points, which means do they open the offense up? They've been keeping it very conservative under Eli Manning over the past month because the defense, they assume, could slow down the other team. I'm not sure that's the case tomorrow with Green Bay.
Yeah, Green Bay put up 23 on the Giants in Week 5. I think George is right. It's not the type of offense that you look to. It's the type of offense you look to contain, not stop. So the way he's playing at this point, he probably had one of the more under-the-radar 40 passing touchdown seasons I've seen because the beginning of it was mired in what's wrong with Aaron Rodgers type of talk. And as soon as that talk really built to a
crescendo, it all came, the talk all fell apart because Aaron Rodgers played his tail off for 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, that he knew that was going to come eventually as well. I mean, Green Bay may have taken a little bit to figure out their, get their footing this season. That's what kind of offense they were going to be. Didn't have much of a running game until Ty Montgomery came along in the Chicago and Dallas games. Then they went away from him, then went back to him. And Rodgers has been what? He's only 18 touchdowns and no interceptions over his last, I don't know, seven games, something silly like that. So he's about as hot as you can get right now. And those numbers would be even better if Devontae Adams would stop dropping touchdown passes.
This is true. Expect to have Randall Cobb back for tomorrow's game. He's been nursing a gimpy ankle, but you're right. Like, what did we see from Randall Cobb before he started sitting out? We didn't really see much. It's become obvious that Jordy, frankly, he exceeded a lot of people's expectations, not yours, George, because I know you're on the Jordy Nelson bandwagon, but Jordy has become the number one receiver, again, that we all expected him to be, or some of us expected him to be. Now, beyond that, we talked a couple of weeks ago, has Randall Cobb kind of lost his footing as the number two receiver, and clearly Devontae Adams has been used in that role whenever they can get to him. Geronimo Allison has filled in admirably in catching a big touchdown last week, but... Yeah, Geronimo Allison won somebody $1 million last week. As much as people may not be familiar with him, the millionaire maker on DraftKings was won basically because of that Geronimo Allison touchdown. So by a player who's not a pro. He beat out a whole bunch of pros. He's a guy that plays light in tournaments. It was an interesting article that I read about him. In any event, so that's where we're at. Randall Cobb may be coming back. We'll review some injuries, too. The Giants have a couple of guys that – Janoris Jenkins has obviously been dealing with a back injury. He's expected to play. We got Jason Pierre-Paul, I believe, is...
He's out.
What is he declared? He's declared out. He's so I think there's one other player in there that I'm missing that's a key injury. But in any event, we will go down game by game throughout the show. And I do have a poll up because I think it's interesting. I think in many instances people are going to pick the Giants. But the poll is... What underdog has the best chance to win the game outright? So Raiders, Lions, Dolphins, or Giants. I think a lot of people are going to go with the Giants, but there's got to be a healthy group of Raiders fans or people that just think Brock Weiler stinks enough that Houston can lose this game at home today.
Listen, anything can happen. Oakland's not winning today. Okay, they're just not. And it's not about Osweiler. Houston has the number one defense in the NFL. What's Oakland going to be able to do? This game smells 14-10. 17-10.
That's the problem. That's the problem for me. Houston can't make it a two-touchdown game because they haven't done it. So a fluke play, a special teams return, and then the game gets turned over on its head. That's the thing that I'm with you. I'm picking Houston, but one play like that, Osweiler could throw a pick six, and they win the way Alabama wins.
Isn't Cook more than likely to make those mistakes?
Absolutely. Especially because he wasn't a terribly accurate quarterback in college. The stat that I saw earlier this week, the number one defense in the NFL with a playoff game at home is 8-0. So that doesn't spell well when you have your third-string rookie quarterback that wasn't terribly accurate in college going up against this defense. I wonder what Oakland is going to try to do, but they have to keep him safe.
Well, we know what they're going to try and do. They're going to try and play defense and win with the running game. Problem is, that's not David Johnson behind. That's not Ezekiel Elliott, Le'Veon Bell behind the line there. They also lost Dar Penn there, one of their best offensive linemen. He's out today as well. Listen, it's a shame. It's nice to have the Raiders back in the mix, the playoff mix here. It's been a long time, and the NFL is better. With teams like the Raiders and Cowboys, for that matter, those teams are better teams, the NFL is better. So it's a shame, but they've run out of gas here. You're down to your third-string quarterback. We can sugarcoat this all we like, that Osweiler might play poorly as well. You're down to your third-string quarterback, a quarterback who admitted after last week's games he didn't know half the plays, that he had never run them in practice. All right? That's not a knock on the Raiders. Your third-string quarterback's not going to run plays. He's just not.
That's right.
So it just lets you know where they're at right now. It would be a monumental task for Oakland to beat Houston today. And Houston's a terrible team. They're not a terrible playoff team. They're not a very good playoff team either. But still, their whole Oakland's nowhere near that.
Yeah, and so you mentioned the Donald Penn injury, which is, I think, bigger than people might realize because it adds to this issue with Their running game wasn't as dominant as we thought it could be. The offensive line was great this year, kept Derek Carr clean. And Latavius Murray and Jalen Richard and others were able to run the ball effectively at times. They weren't a totally dominant run team like some thought they could be. Now, with that injury, that takes a hit. Add to it that Jadeveon Clowney, as good as he is and as good a reputation as he has as an edge rusher, he's an incredible run stopper for somebody at that position. So they got to run away from him. So now you are limiting more and more options as you get through it. The quarterback doesn't know the plays. The starting guard is out. They can't run Jadeveon Clowney's way. So this is if Connor Cook is just going to have to play street ball with Amari and Michael Crabtree, which is a pretty good duo to play that with. But, again, we're going to have some problems there. That 8-0 stat really stood out to me. You know, again, we'll continue to go through these games. We'll have some fun with it. If George, if you have some lineups for any of these fantasy contests, we'll go through those. I'm going to go through mine. What I really want to do, too, in subsequent segments is go do a little bit of review. We're not going to hammer away and hatchet away at it, but have a little fun. I'll ask George some trivia questions, see how on top of his game he is, and trust me, I know he is, but we'll have some fun with that. I want to see, like, whose bandwagon you folks are on for next year. So we'll ask some fun poll questions there as well, kind of reviewing and taking a look towards next year. And also, we'll have Gary Davenport on at 9, but one of Gary Davenport's colleagues at Fantasy Sharks wrote this article, a guy named John Georgopoulos, and it's about the curse of 370, George, which is the number of touches that a running back could see in a given season, and they drop off in the subsequent season. But he actually move that number down a little bit and talking about a curse of 325. So if a running back has 325 touches in a given season, we see a drop off from one year to the next. It's pretty startling when you see the statistics, and we'll break that down after the break. Actually, we'll do that, talk a little bit about it, and we'll see who we may have to shy away from going into 2017. So we'll take a look at the number of 1,000-yard receivers, the number of 1,000-yard rushers. By the way, George, how many 1,000-yard receivers do you think there were this year? Include tight ends.
Oh, I think it's only one or two there. Oh, 14.
It is 25.
Oh, well.
It's a big number, so we'll talk about those guys. It's twice the number that we have at running back. So receivers racking up yards quite a bit. Kelce and Olsen, the only two tight ends that went over 1,000 yards this year. 23 different wide receivers, and some of those names will shock you. So we'd like to go through all of that. We'll talk a little bit of MLB. George, you are one of our lead MLB writers as well. I know you're on top of this stuff. There's a lot of players that have been moving around, some head scratchers, but we'll talk a little bit about that later in the show. Given that, George and I will be back after the break. It's Mike and George and the Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Network. Welcome back. The Roto Experts in the Morning, the Saturday edition with Mike Bluta, George Kurtz. I wanted to get into this article, George. It was written by John T. Georgopoulos. He is a writer for Fantasy Sharks, part-time writer for Fantasy Sharks. I was communicating with him over the week. We're going to have him on the show at a later date. This weekend just didn't work out for him. So, but I thought his data was pretty interesting because he did this, frankly, going into the 2016 season, but we were having an online discussion about it, and it came to be that I read this article. And basically, it's about the death. He calls the article The Death of the Curse of 370. And the curse of 370 is that any running back that sees 370 touches in a given season can expect, on average, a very significant drop-off in production the following season. So we've seen that over time. There's a whole bunch of recent phenomenons with it. DeMarco Murray in 2014, he moved to the Eagles, huge drop-off. Le'Veon Bell, due to injury, huge drop-off from 2014 to 2015. So, but that's not a ton of data there. So what he wanted to do was drop it down to players that have touched the ball 325 times in a season and see what type of return you would see there to the following season. And the numbers are pretty stark because there's a lot more instances of players touching the ball 325 times, and there's an average performance decline of nearly 23%. Over 80% of the running backs decline, and the average performance decline is almost 23%. Now, going into this season, the two players that embodied that curse of 325 were Adrian Peterson and Devonta Freeman. Needless to say, Adrian Peterson, due to injury, his production is down, I mean, nearly 100%. But Devonta Freeman was down slightly. I think you could attribute part of that to Tevin Coleman being healthier at stretches during the season. Needless to say, I looked at this and I thought it was pretty interesting. I don't know about your thoughts and taking a quick review of it.
Well, I mean, you got to go by player. I don't think there's going to be any one overall thing. Oh, it's over 325, you're done. Why? Why didn't they play well the next season? I mean, you mentioned Freeman. I completely agree. It's because of Tevin Coleman was there. Coleman was hurt last year. Coleman played very well this year. He was hurt this year as well, but he was also played well when healthy. That takes away touches. So you're not going to have as good a season. I know DeMarco Murray didn't apply to this, but someone like Murray, a great 14. Well, in 15, he was a free agent, went to the wrong team that didn't know how to use him.
That's right.
You know, this year, went to the right team, and he's back to where he was. So I think you need to take each player individually and see why. Is there an underlying cause, or is it because of 325?
Right. And so next year we have technically only four players qualify, but I'm going to include another two, and I'll go player by player. I'll do the number of touches first. So we have David Johnson, who actually hit 373 touches. He was touching the ball at obviously an astounding rate and got hurt in that final game. So it would have been even higher. But 373 touches on the year. Needless to say, he was the top running back in fantasy football, especially in PPR leagues. But your thoughts, really, for him next year, do you consider him the easy number one running back? Or do you have reservations about Carson Palmer being another year older, about the team possibly shifting focus off of him slightly to keep him healthier? Any concerns about David Johnson going into next year?
Well, there a lot of stuff comes into play with it. I mean, we're talking right now, and this season's not even over yet. We're worried about next year. Suppose Palmer's not the quarterback there. Suppose out of nowhere they decide to go with a rookie. You know, they draft somebody, and you know they're done with Palmer. You know, well, that's going to lower Johnson's expectations somewhat. Which Palmer are we getting? Palmer played pretty well the last 3-4 weeks of the season. If he's that quarterback again, well, that raises Johnson up. But if he's the quarterback
after week five, by the way, to your point, after week five, Carson Palmer was a top 12 quarterback in fantasy football. People may not realize that. There were some disappointing weeks, but if you're taking from week five on, Carson Palmer was a QB1 every week.
Yeah, so you got to take a lot of things into consideration there when it comes to each and every player here. Do I think David Johnson's the number one pick right now? Right now, yes. For some reason drafting for the 2017 NFL season right now, I'm probably taking David Johnson number one. Le'Veon Bell would be really close as well, but I guess there's always
Is that number one overall or number one running back?
Number one overall. Okay. There's always a chance that Le'Veon Bell doesn't come back to Pittsburgh, which is why I can't consider him for the number one spot right now. He is a free agent. Maybe he goes to Cleveland.
True. I get that. So next on the list is Zeke Elliott. 354 touches, basically didn't play that last game, so the touch count would have been higher. He would have been over 370, but we'll take it as it is. 354, still going to have the best offensive line in the league, most likely. I think those guys are all locked up, not going to be any moving parts, not going to be any moving parts on the offense as far as we can tell. Dez is locked in. We still got Cole Beasley. We got Dak Prescott. We got Jason Witten, assuming he doesn't retire, which I haven't heard, but you never know. If they win the Super Bowl, he could move on to greener pastures. So Zeke Elliott, 354 touches. Any concerns there?
No, Dallas has actually been very conservative with Elliott because they rested him every third series. So generally, probably about one time a half. He didn't play in there. He wasn't in a two-minute drill. And as silly as that sounds, he wasn't in there. I imagine the playoffs, this will all change. But so they've rested him kind of well. You know, they've had Alfred Morris, McFadden, so they've had guys who they can run the ball with. And he's also 22. I'm assuming he's 22. He's a young guy, so I think this might maybe be a little bit more of a concern if he was 28, 29.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that comes into play of it as well. Obviously, he's younger, should be able to take some more hits. But running back, listen, you're getting it to, 20 car collisions a game. Yeah, that's really what it comes down to. So it's going to take a toll on your body.
Yeah, and that's really the nature of this, right? The wear and tear on a player from year to year. You know, we saw some pretty extreme examples of Chris Johnson in the past, him dropping off and him really just kind of running out of steam. He made a nice comeback with the Cardinals, but ultimately the wear and tear shows. And Jamaal Charles is another example. The wear and tear has taken its toll. He's had multiple ACL injuries and Achilles injuries, and all this adds up over time. Not unlike other NFL players, but at the running back position, clearly it is a stark reminder of how rough this game can be. So the next player on the list is DeMarco Murray. So he's the oldest one of this group, 346 touches this season. It did surprise me the workload that he saw, excuse me, not mid-season because we saw he's playing so well, but if you asked me going into the year, I never would have thought he would be anywhere near those number of touches because I thought he was going to share the ball with Derrick Henry. I was wrong on Derrick Henry. I thought he looked good when he was in there, but why would you give the ball to somebody else when DeMarco Murray is running like he did? So concerns about DeMarco Murray going into next season.
Well, I think that's what you're looking at. I think there will be more of a share with Derrick Henry. There's nothing wrong with Derrick Henry. That's the problem. If he was like, running back, yes, then I feel better about DeMarco Murray. But Henry's a good back in his own right. You know, Tennessee really didn't know. I shouldn't say they don't know what they were getting, but they got Murray for a song in the trade with Philadelphia. So they picked him up, and they ended up having two very good backs, which is fine. You know, for an NFL team, that's fine. It worked out well this year for Murray owners. But next year, you know, I don't know what the split ended up being as far as the breakdown between carries between Murray and Henry.
293 for DeMarco and 110 for Derrick Henry.
So for all intents and purposes, it was 3-4. It was three quarters. Yep. For every three carries that one got, that Murray got, Henry got one. What if it's two-thirds next season? Maybe even closer to 50-50. That wouldn't shock me either. 60-40? I'm going to go with 60-40. Yeah. So obviously that's going to lessen Murray's value some. Now you can make an argument that I'll keep him healthier. You know, last two games of the season, he was a bust this year. He didn't really do much at all. So you can make that argument as well. A two-back system is not necessarily a bad thing. But Murray, I don't think, is no longer going to be the bell cow. And for me, if you're carrying the ball at least three-quarters of the time, you're the bell cow. I don't see that anymore for Murray.
To George's point, DeMarco Murray's last two games, he had 25 carries for a grand total of 63 yards, so did not step up. Whereas Derrick Henry, in that same amount of time, 4 for 13 against Jacksonville, and then 15 for 65 with a score in that final game against Houston. So I'm with you. I think this is the guy so far that you have to have the biggest concern about only because of the share. I think Tennessee's built their team the right way. They got Taylor Lewan. They got Taylor Decker there. What was his name? Lewan and Decker there are bookend tackles. I think they're going to continue to play offense the way they did this year. You could say they'll try to open it up more for Mariota, but I actually don't think they'll do that. I think they'll continue to play in a similar manner to how they did this year. They got to clean some things up in the defensive backfield, but clearly ball control is something they can do, and they did very well this season. Next player on the list is Le'Veon Bell. George, you made the point earlier about his potential free agency. Obviously, the Steelers have talked openly about franchise tagging him and then working on the deal long term. I think he's proven his wares to them, but there's one big question mark out there. We know what it is. It's not even his health, which could be considered a question mark, but it's his suspensions. He's got suspensions 2 years in a row. If he gets another one, it's going to be long term. They got to make sure he's solid in that regard before they commit to him financially. So your concerns about Bell, I assume, are based around that.
Of course. That and the fact that, you know, we can't be sure he ends up in Pittsburgh. They can say all they want that, Bell wants to be back. Bell said that. Pittsburgh, sure, I'm sure, wants him. But they're going to want to structure that contract in a way that protects them in case he does get suspended again, which means the signing bonus will be coming back. Or maybe the signing bonus gets paid out, you know, stretched out, rather than getting, I don't know, $40 million all at once. Maybe it's, you know, $5 million here, $5 million there. So that's going to be the part that really has to be worked out there. So all parties can say they want to work it out, but you never know until the agents and the with GM get involved here. I do expect him to be back.
It's his own fault. If it's his own fault, if he didn't have those, he would have been the highest paid running back in the history of the NFL. I could say that just about unequivocally. The Steelers are not a team that's known to have big payouts like that, but this guy has done it. exactly the way they need him to, and it was right there in front of him. But these suspensions will pull that contract back some. So I do think he comes back, and I do expect that. But to George's point, as of right now, that's your concern. Next guy on the list who technically didn't qualify for the curse of 325 is Todd Gurley, but he was at 321 touches, so he's right there on that mark. Obviously, the Rams have a long way to go. And the place they have to start, because they already technically have a QB, is offensive line. I think that's where they're going to have to go in these drafts. Obviously, they've lost some draft picks in order to get Jared Goff. But they're going to have to go O-line to protect Todd Gurley, correct?
I would think so. But there are so many moving parts here. They need a coach, first of all.
Yeah.
No, that's the first thing you need. So you want to see what kind of coach they're going to get here. We need to really – you can't blame the offensive line for all – of Gurley's problems. Right? I mean, he didn't even do well against San Fran in that game. And you and I can run against San Fran. But he got still got nothing there, or at least not nowhere near what we thought he'd get. There's lots of issues there. They need other playmakers. You know, Kenny Britt's a free agent. He may not. I assume he's not coming back to L.A. I don't think he'd want to be back. Maybe he does, maybe. Whatever. But he could be gone, too. So they need wide receivers as well. They need offensive line help. You know, we assume that Goff is the answer at quarterback. Well, at least the Rams are going to assume that. They need defensive help, too. What if their head coach is a defensive head coach, and he has control? He may go with a defensive player first round. You just don't know what you're going to get. So there are so many moving parts here. What is Gurley a one-year wonder? You know, where he had the one big year. For some reason, teams took him lightly or just took the Rams lightly. This year, they studied for him, figured out what he can do well and can't do well, and shut him down. A lot of moving parts here with Gurley. I'm not a big worry about the curse, per se, more as the team around him is pretty poor.
True. And the last guy I wanted to include for the discussion, because he was pacing well ahead of 325, is Melvin Gordon. He had 295 touches in the 14 games, but obviously a huge breakout season for him. So we're going to have to see what these injuries have done to him, but he was even talking about playing at the end of the year, even though we thought it was, and we knew it was a pipe dream. He was talking about it, potentially walking onto the field for those three extra yards. He finished with 997 this year, so just shy of 1,000. Like George and I talked about, it really wasn't a big deal, so why put him at risk? But concerns about Melvin Gordon. Talk about moving parts. San Diego's going to have some moving parts, including maybe the whole franchise.
Moving parts, yeah. Gordon's interesting. I don't know why he would want to, because 1,000 is such a nice number. You break down 1,000 over 16 games, it's 60-somewhat yards. It's really actually not very good. The benchmark, the 1,000 is from when there was a 14-game season back in the 70s. That benchmark should really be more around 1,200 to really have a good season for a running back. Anyway, Gordon, all right, had the really poor rookie season. Sophomore season was a breakout player. He's a player where you can make an argument if he would have played the entire season, was the fantasy MVP. Because he would have won a lot of people, a lot of leagues. But he missed most of the fantasy playoffs, so he's not going to be that. I'm going to be torn somewhat on him. There's a lot, once again, you mentioned, there's a lot of moving parts in San Diego next year. I assume they're moving. You know, we think they're moving, but you never know in the NFL. And that'll be a mess. Just a mess. Keenan Allen will be back healthy here. I mean, I like Gordon, Mike, and we know running back is thin, but he's probably going to be more of a running back two for me next year. High-end running back two, but a running back two nonetheless because of all the worries here. The injury doesn't concern me so much because he wanted to play, thought he could play. That's a good sign. It was like he knew, I'm done, no way I could play. He thought he could play, so I expect him to be more than healthy before all the offseason training camps and everything else happens. So he should be fine for that. I'll just be more worried about everything else going on around him. Plus, I'm not so sure, is he the back that he was this year, or is he back that he was last year, or is the reality more like somewhere in between?
And to add to Melvin Gordon, so he just shy of 1,000 yards, but he also had 419 yards receiving. He had 12 total touchdowns. He caught 41 passes. He was a do-it-all guy. I really liked him coming out of Wisconsin. I think he's more sophomore season than freshman season or rookie season, but I would argue that right now, first of all, they don't have a coach right now. The whole franchise is probably moving.
It's a mess.
Even though nothing's been determined yet.
Dumpster
but
fire.
I would argue that they're going to be the hardest team to evaluate going into next year because of the things I just mentioned. And I sympathize with Mike McCoy for this reason. I've never seen a team 2 years in a row suffer the injury bug like they did. I think they had 24 players on IR this season. So you are done. when that happens. You start losing starting corners, your playmaking wide receiver, offensive linemen are going down. Joey Bosa didn't play for injuries and holdouts and the like. It was a disaster from really day one, and they lost a whole bunch of close games early, and then it was over. Like, McCoy couldn't save his job, even though they liked him. They just had to move on because you can't win 9 games in 2 years and say that you're competing, especially in that division where, you know, they could have had 3 teams in the playoffs. So that being said, so that's where I'm at. I think Melvin Gordon's going to be a hard guy to evaluate. I don't think he repeats this success next year, but it could be really close, and we're going to have to see who they hire and the like. And going back to your L.A. point, if they hire a defensive coach, Godspeed being a Rams fan, because that'll be a disaster for Jared Goff. So
it's got to be a quarterback. I would think it will be a quarterback. It has to be.
Or a defensive coach whose best assistant coach and dearest friend in the league is a quarterback whisperer, because Chris Winkie's not going to get it done, I don't think. So in any event, I thought we'd have a little bit of fun with that. It's pretty interesting to take a look at that. 6 guys that could be on your radar for a potential dip in production. I think George and I would both agree DeMarco Murray's probably the one with the biggest question mark around him, simply because Derrick Henry has got to get fed the ball. He was effective this year. So that's it. We're going to talk a little bit about 1,000-yard receivers, 1,000-yard rushers in the next segment. It's Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning. There it is. Slow Jams. It's the Slow Jam segment on the Roto Experts in the Morning on Saturday edition. Mike and George here with you till 10 o'clock. Just talked a little bit about running backs in the last segment. We got some other stuff here coming up, which I wanted to talk about. And a little bit of a review, and then we'll talk about the games today.
We're getting 8 to 12 inches of snow. How about that?
We are?
I am.
When is that happening?
Now.
Jeez.
I am. You're not. You're more in the 4 to 6 range.
Well, you live like...
I live in Guam. I know.
Yeah, like Nantucket, basically.
Yeah.
Out on an island there. So,
I think Scott didn't say on the island.
One thing I wanted to talk about with you, George, is a little bit of a review on 1,000-yard rushers, 1,000-yard receivers this season. And what am I looking at? Zeke Bell. Okay. Sorry about that. I got a little confused there. So, 1,000-yard rushers. I asked you the receivers question earlier. How many 1,000-yard rushers do you think there were this year?
Okay. Some of these guys get hurt. I'm going to go single digits. Am I at least in single digits?
Nope.
No, it's double digits? Wow, that's surprising to me.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Then again, I just said it. It's only 60. It's only average.
That's why I brought this up, because I was doing some research. Yeah, it's really not that tough, but it's up from last year. So,
I guess what I say 14. Yeah. I'll stick with 14.
It is 12, and then Melvin Gordon had 997. I feel like mentioning him because I feel like he is, worthy of being mentioned. He would have easily cleared 1,000 yards. Zeke Elliott wins the rushing title. We got Jordan Howard came in second at 1,313 yards. First time in the NFL history that running backs finished 1 and 2, I believe. It's the first time in NFL history running backs finished 1 and 2 for the rushing title. Jordan Howard, would you consider him to be we got a few breakout guys this year, right? Zeke Elliott is probably the breakout star in fantasy, but Jordan Howard's got to be on that short list, right?
I don't know if you can say Elliott's a breakout star. We all thought he'd be good, right? I mean, it's not a shock. Is he a breakout because he's a rookie? You just don't know? Okay, I can buy that. But I think Howard's a much bigger breakout guy. Who saw this? Yeah. Even the Bears didn't know what they had. Because they were starting Jeremy Langford. If Langford didn't get hurt, they might still be starting Jeremy Langford. I mean, that's just awful. I mean, it always boggles the mind that teams don't see this on their own players. Are they, the incumbent has to be the starter? It boggles the mind. Howard to me is a low-end running back one going into next season. Now, granted, things could change. I'm assuming they'll get a better quarterback. Assuming? I don't know. Maybe they won't. Maybe it's Matt Barkley. I don't know. Maybe Jim McMahon's coming out of retirement. But I assume they will do better at quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan Howard only had 12 carries through the first 3 games of this season. Then he had that game against Detroit where he goes 23 for 111, and he was off to the races. Really only one bad game after that for the rest of the year. He had a couple of low totals in there, but, mixed it up with some touchdowns and had a really good season. So the rest of the 1,000-yard rushers, Zeke Elliott, Jordan Howard, DeMarco Murray, Jay Ajayi, he had 1,200 yards, but three of those
games
were 200-yard games. So he's an interesting guy to try to figure out for next year. I mean, he had a 25-carry, 204 two-touchdown game against the Steelers.
The numbers team didn't know what they had, right? Because they started Arian Foster over him. God.
I agree. He didn't even dress for the first game.
Oh, he was punished. He sulked. He was whined. And that play. Right. If I'm not, you know, if I'm not starting, I'm not departing.
That's right. So, and then he goes to New England, 5 carries for 14. Cleveland, 7 carries for 28. Cincinnati, 6 carries for 33. And then against Tennessee, he had 13 carries. And then the Steeler game, where he goes 25 for 204 for two touchdowns. Buffalo, 28 for 214 and a score. Next game against the Jets after the bye, 24 for 111 and a score. And then a bunch of years, sort of standard average kind of games. And then end of the year, your fantasy championship, JHI, 32 carries, 206 and a score. So a big, big number there. But, you know, of his 1,272 yards, half of them came in three games. So he's going to be a difficult guy to evaluate. I think I'm going to be more focused on how healthy is this Miami offensive line going into next year, because they do have some talent there. And when it was fixed and when everybody was healthy, they looked pretty good, George.
I think you hit the nail right on the head there. It's that offensive line. Because when the offensive line went Tunsil, you know, Albert, Pounce is still out. Pounce is out for the year. When they were all in there, that's when Ajayi was at his best. So that should tell you something, that he needs the offensive line to be to succeed. Although in the Buffalo game, Pouncey was still out there. But so yes, you want that Ajayi. Now this is a guy when coming out, we assume he's gonna have a short shelf life with the knee injury, that won't be a long term NFL player. You know, Miami, you know, he showed spurts last season, not what he did this year, but he showed spurts last season of being a decent player. But they still went Arian Foster, and like I said, they didn't recognize what they had there. He goes in the next season as a starting running back. Probably, once again, high-end running back 2, low-end running back 1 for me. I do like him, but I want to see how well they build around him. You know, what's going to go on with that offense? Miami's made the playoffs this season. Good for them. But they still have work to do there, really, in my mind, all over the place. I'm still not sold on Tannehill. You know, and I think, you know, you wonder if teams are going to force Tannehill to beat them by loading up the box and stopping Ajayi.
Yeah, Tannehill was certainly helped this year with that running game, and we'll continue to monitor that, obviously, throughout the offseason. That offensive line is going to be a huge key. You know, we've seen offensive lines transform offenses in this league throughout time, but really, I feel like 2016 was a particularly glaring year for that trend, where Dallas's offensive line just completely dominated. Oakland's offensive line was fantastic and really helped the passing game and their ability to score points. I think we see that in Tennessee, where they drafted Jack Conklin to help that offensive line. I said Taylor Decker earlier, but it's Jack Conklin on the offensive line with Taylor Lewan on the other side. So in any event, Tennessee's offensive line really helped to keep Mariota clean for the most part, notwithstanding that injury in week 15. And then obviously DeMarco Murray with another huge season. So I think it's interesting that yet another offensive line in Miami could be a key to that offense being really good. A stark contrast is in Minnesota, where going into the year, they'd already lost one of their players that they expected to start. And then throughout the year, they lost two more. So basically by the end of the year, they were working with one or two starting offensive linemen that were the starters basically in August. So really fell apart for them throughout the year, and we saw the effects there.
Where does Peterson end up?
It's a great question.
$18 million is what he's not going back to Minnesota. They're not paying him $18 million. Where does he end up? What I guess comes down to what do you believe? Do you think he has still gassed up in the tank? He was pretty poor even before the injury. Now some of that's on the offensive line, but not all of it.
Yeah. That's too small a number of touches for me to get a real read on it.
But if you're a GM of a team and he's a running back, that's what you got.
Yeah.
And then how much will a team offer him in free agency?
That's the interesting part, is like where the money comes in. Obviously, it's not going to be anywhere near 18.
Can you insult? How bad are you going to feel about insulting Adrian Peterson with a 1 year, $3 million offer?
Yeah, or like, does he get something like a 2 year for 20 with 10 guaranteed?
I can't.
You know what I mean?
And then
you cut him after year one. 15? You guarantee him 10? A 2 year, $15 million deal and guarantee him 10?
I guess that's more
something like that.
Could be. I mean, but who? It's because of the who.
That's a great question.
I think Adrian Peterson, where he ends up, I think Minnesota would like to keep him, but they're going to want to cut that cap number down a lot. And I think they're going to want to cut down two-thirds from 18 to 6.
How about the Giants?
No, I don't see them paying him. Giants had a huge offseason before this year. They fixed their defense, Jenkins.
But the money I just talked about isn't a crazy amount.
Yeah, but Giants are going to have other issues. They got to fix their offensive line, too. They do need a running back, but I think they're going to see with Perkins if he's the guy. I think Perkins really could be the guy.
Yeah, he could. He could. Yeah,
I think he needs a caddy, but I think he could be the guy.
Probably not a reason for the Giants to spend there. I mean, there's some other teams out there you could probably make an argument for, but, would he go over to Green Bay? But Ty Montgomery is getting the job done, so I don't even know that that's necessary. Going back to the 1,000-yard rushers, we got Le'Veon Bell in there, LeSean McCoy, David Johnson, LeGarrette Blount, just a total shocker of a season to me. He's a guy I regret not taking a chance on. Devonta Freeman, I thought, people had some doubts about Devonta Freeman. I think he put those doubts to rest for me personally and for a lot of other people out there. I think he's proven himself to be a really good back in this system. Doesn't mean you can put him on any team, but he's been a really good back in this system and extremely versatile. He's great catching the ball. He's very few guys that are better catching the ball out of the backfield than him in the NFL. David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell. And then who else would you argue? I could argue him right in that discussion there as the third best guy at it. So Lamar Miller, listen, he had some struggles this year, but when at the end of the day he had just about a 1,300-yard season, just a little shy of that, on the 200 and nearly 300 touches, 6 touchdowns, disappointing, but the Houston offense was totally inefficient the whole year. I don't know that I blame Lamar Miller. I would have no problem drafting him again next year.
Depends where. I wasn't high on Miller this year. Not as high as everybody else was. I think people had him pretty much number 5 overall back. I just wasn't on that. I thought what would happen. We break down as the season went along here. Plus, I wasn't sold on the Houston offense. That being said, he is a running back. They're valuable. He is a starting running back. I wouldn't mind having him, but I'm not taking him in rounds 1 or 2.
Yeah, so Mark Ingram, the next guy on the list, 1,043 yards. I've always been a Mark Ingram fan. I know a lot of people are out on Mark Ingram, but I don't know what the guy has to do to sort of earn respect of people. He's great catching the ball out of the backfield. I think they could have used him even more.
Sean Payton, a Christmas present or a birthday present.
Okay.
He has some goal line carries.
Yeah, exactly. But he ended up with 10 touchdowns on the year total, but you're right. He had the John Kuhn 3-touchdown game. Ugh. He had Tim Hightower poaching from him. He had Tavares Cadet poaching from him. If you give Mark Ingram another 4 rushing touchdowns, which is reasonable, it's an even bigger season than people realize that he had. I mean, he had, as it stands right now, 1,362 yards total on 251 touches and 10 touchdowns. It's a really good fantasy season for Mark Ingram, especially in PPR leagues. So, and that's with Tim Hightower poaching and John Kuhn poaching and all the rest. So, in any event, I think Mark Ingram is a better back than people still give him credit for, and I'm happy to draft him again next year. Frank Gore is the final 1,000-yard rusher. Who would have thought? Frank Gore, yet again. He had a very John Stewart-esque type of season. Only 4 touchdowns on the year, and he didn't score one after their bye week in week 10. So that was not a ton there, but he did have 4 receiving touchdowns, I should say. But just about 1,300 yards, George, for Frank Gore and 8 touchdowns.
I don't know what to tell you. The man never ages. He just never ages. Good for Frank Gore. Yeah, I certainly wasn't high. I mean, I had probably a low-end running back, too, coming in. More touchdown-dependent than anything else. And I thought he would get those touchdowns at the goal line with Andrew Luck on that offense. And he ends up running for 13. I mean, unbelievable. That being said, sooner or later, the age has to hit here. It has to. Mm-hmm. But I'll be drafting him the same place next year, Mike. Low-end running back, too.
Yeah, and that's if you had Frank Gore in your lineup as your number 2 every week, you're in good shape for that position. Not a lot of flashy games at all. In fact, I'll go to this right now. He had 200-yard games and really none, only one other 80-yard game. That's from rushing the ball. But each and every week. He was getting enough touches. He was catching a few balls. He got some touchdowns that helped you. So in that sense, Frank Gore was a, you know, a very solid pick for wherever you got him. And the final two guys that were just outside are Melvin Gordon. We talked about him pretty extensively. And Carlos Hyde, who obviously missed the final game there and missed another couple of games in the middle of the year. But he ended up with 988 yards, another 163 receiving. He had 9 total touchdowns. I like Carlos Hyde more than a lot of people do. There's so many moving parts in San Francisco. Obviously, this is a theme today with the moving parts. So many moving parts in San Francisco. Frankly, it's difficult to evaluate him. No coach, no GM, and they need about of the 44 starting to 24 starting players. They probably need about 15 new ones. So we'll see how that goes. Yeah. Well, we'll get to wide receivers in the next segment. It's Mike and George, Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Network Radio. Welcome back. It's the Roto Experts in the Morning. Taking it all the way till 10 o'clock, we have Gary Davenport in about 10 minutes or so. I want to run through the wide receivers, but we got 23 of those guys, so we'll do that in a future segment. It's a surprising number. Well, I'll do the tight ends with it. The two tight ends, like I mentioned earlier in the show, were Travis Kelce and Greg Olsen cleared 1,000 yards. George, you know who led tight ends in receptions this year? Kelce and Olsen went over 1,000 yards. Do you think it was one of them that led the league in receptions or another tight end?
A tight end that led the league in receptions. Well, it's not Gronkowski.
Could have been Kelce or Olsen. But,
if I had to choose, I would have to go Kelce. I know he had the most yardage. But so Kelce lost doing about this. Yeah, I'm guessing it's not
Kelce. Kelce lost by one catch. Can you guess who led the league?
Oh, Kelce. How about Delonte Walker?
Nope. I'll give you one more guess.
First guy that came to my mind. Not Jimmy Graham. Can't be Zach Ertz, even though I know he came on big late. Witten, no. The Hunt Gates, no. I know I'm probably leaving somebody out here.
Nah. Shocking. Oh, it's a shocking player.
Shocking, is it? I don't know.
Only because of what we expected from him coming
Shannon
into the
Sharp.
Season. It is Dennis Pitta. Led the league.
God.
Yeah, led tight ends.
Would have never gotten that if you gave me 20 guesses.
86 catches for 729 yards—a shockingly low number.
You know, if you would have told me, if you would give me the parameters of what he did, but not give me the name, I would have guessed Kyle Rudolph because Brad was throwing everything short.
It's actually a pretty good guess because Kyle Rudolph, with that huge game in Week 17, came on strong. He was right behind Kelce with 83 catches. He had 840 yards for 7 touchdowns. So as painful as it was to watch Kyle Rudolph and the average yards per catch, Dennis Pitta's was even lower, 86 catches for 729 yards. Again, only the two scores. He also had an 11-catch game in Week 17, which is what vaulted him over Kelce, who had, I believe, a 1-catch game in Week 17. So if we were just talking about the standard fantasy season, Kelce came out on top. But so going into next year, by the way, on tight ends, we'll just do this quick before we hit a break. Going into next year, does Kelce vault to the top of your list for tight ends?
I think, I don't think it's going to matter where I rank him, Mike, because I'm not drafting a tight end early. It's so deep. I'm not drafting a tight end early. I'm not drafting a quarterback early. I'm going to go bananas with wide receivers and running backs. I know that's exactly how I'll draft. Kelce, number one. I don't know if I'm going to trust Alex Smith again next year. Probably not. But Gronk, I'll probably have Gronk number one, but I will not. And I'll be saying this over and over again when you and I are talking in July and August. I'm not drafting Gronkowski in round one or round two because I think expecting 16 games out of him is silly. It's just silly. He might do it, but I'm not going to expect it. And if I automatically don't think you're playing 16 games, it means I don't know when those injuries are coming. Maybe once again this year, it's in the fantasy playoffs, which doesn't help you. Maybe it's the first couple of games of the season again. But either way, I'm not banking on it anymore. I'm just not doing it.
I think Gronk officially has fallen out of the first round for everyone after this season. I think this is too tough of a hit for his long-term prospects for people to continue to draft him in the first round. I've always said, and we said earlier this year, he's too tough a guy to build a team around. When you draft him in the first round, you're tying your hands at some other positions. And I, even when I do mock drafts, I'd always find it more difficult to build a team to when I had Gronkowski there. You know, the one guy I'm going to be looking at the tight end position next year, and I'm bummed he actually had this game in week 17, was Zach Ertz, because I feel like I can get him in some mid rounds. And I think he could potentially build upon a 78-catch, 816-yard, four-touchdown season. Now, a huge amount of those came in Week 17, where he went 13 for 139 and two scores. He won me a little bit of money, too, in DFS. So thank you, Zach Ertz. But beyond that, I just think that because he was hurt earlier this year, those numbers would have been considerably bigger. He finished with 78 catches. He was really hurt for like 5 weeks, George, where he missed two games and he was hobbled in some others. I think he would have easily been the leading tight end pass catcher in the league. So that's a guy I'm going to look for, but I don't know how much his value is going to rise in this offseason.
Agreed. I mean, listen, I hate it with my Zach Ertz. But I was big on Ertz. I was big on Ertz this year. Having some, I think at least half the leagues I played in, I drafted him late because I expected a breakout season. I guess it sort of happened, sort of didn't happen. But he's also, you mentioned he was hurt for a while. His big games came late, where you probably didn't have him anymore. You probably already had gotten rid of him. Week 17 didn't matter for most of the overwhelming majority of us, so that didn't help us any. He's a player that I could see being a lightning rod next year. Yes, if he can be consistent, he's great. If not, he's going to tick a lot of owners off.
Good stuff. Through the first hour, polls are still up. Put another one up on which player you most, which running back you're most concerned about. So check us at FNTSY Radio on Twitter. Hit us up in the next hour. Gary Davenport back from Fantasy Sharks and Bleacher Report. We're going to talk about all the playoff games. Be back for the next hour. Thanks, folks.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Hour number two on the Roto Experts in the Morning, the Saturday edition. Mike and George here for the next hour. Gary Davenport coming up here in a minute. I want to ask George, since we were talking about a lot of different things, we're going to get into the games here with Gary. But I'll ask you one trivia question before he gets on, since we're going to talk wide receivers after Gary's segment. How many wide receivers caught 100 balls this year?
I guess I should have studied up for these questions here. How many wide receivers caught 100 balls this year? I honestly have
no tight ends did, obviously. So how many wide receivers did that?
I'm not going to say 14 again. I'll take the under. My favorite number is 9, so I'll go with 9.
Only 3. Julian Edelman came close with 98, Jordy Nelson 97, Mike Evans 96. So I've given you some hints there. Which are the three guys that did it?
Oh, my God. I keep answering these questions. Which of the three guys? I'll still go Antonio Brown.
That's right. 106. He came in second.
So somebody did more than Brown.
Somebody had 107.
Beckham.
Beckham was third with 101.
Great. The one guy I'm going to miss is the number one guy. Who else?
I talked to you a couple of weeks ago about this guy, and you were stunned at the number of catches he had.
Oh, well, then I'm definitely going to miss it. I'm always thinking about top guys on good teams there. Somewhere in North Dallas, New England.
I mean, he's a top guy. Oakland. This guy is going to the Hall of Fame. We tend to forget about him because...
Oh, Fitzgerald.
There you go. Larry Fitzgerald, 107. 1,000-yard season again for Larry Fitzgerald with the 6 scores, which, you know, it's a Larry Fitzgerald-like season. But for Larry Fitzgerald to lead the league in receptions, I think a lot of people didn't anticipate that. I had a somewhat infamous rant on Larry Fitzgerald this offseason about people taking John Brown and Michael Floyd in front of him. I think I win that one, but clearly I didn't expect Larry Fitzgerald to lead the league in catches. So moving on to the next thing, let's talk about the games. We'll bring Gary into it when we can get a hold of him. But so we got Houston and Oakland. We'll talk about that game first. Injuries, Have played a role here. Obviously, you mentioned Donald Penn is out. We got Derek Carr, and obviously Matt McGloin will be out, which leaves us with Connor Cook. Let me ask you this on the Houston side. Do you think they're better off with Brock Osweiler, or would they have been better off with Tom Savage?
Yeah, I don't think it matters. I think for Houston, they probably would have won this, or I think they will win this game with either one, but lose next week with either one. You know, I just don't think it mattered. I think this is a they catch a break here, obviously, without Derek Carr. I think they got to run the ball a lot. I think Houston is going to try to win this game with Lamar Miller and the defense. I think they feel that's enough, and I got to agree. I think it's enough as well. The only way Houston loses this game is what you hinted at earlier, Osweiler making mistakes, or in the return game for Oakland. You know, if they can get punt return, special teams, whatever, I can see that working as well. Other than that, I think it's going to be a very conservative game. I think this is going to be a boring game. There's a game I was going to go out for this weekend and maybe record. It would be this one.
Yeah, it's at 4:35 today. Not exactly the prime time showing. Houston, the line started at 3.5, but it has moved towards Houston. So the money has moved Houston up a half point. They are now a 4-point favorite. Do you think they cover those 4 points?
Yes. I already said the final score for me, I think we Scott and Jake and I were talking yesterday, I had 20-6. We all had Houston winning, different scores. I actually had the most points for the winning team. I think everybody else picked 17 or 14, something like that.
I think Brock Osweiler had a game earlier this year. I believe it was a 24-21 victory. But, yeah, there's the numbers. It was 14 of 20. He was 14 of 27 for 99 yards. The average yards per attempt on that are incredibly low. And I think, unfortunately, we might see a lot of that today, to your point, George.
Fedorowicz could be a good play today.
I think Fedorowicz and even Ryan Griffin, just to make it even a little bit safer, just throw it to both of those guys in the running
short
backs.
Passes.
Take DeAndre Hopkins out of the mix completely. And I guess the one encouraging thing is DeAndre was actually pretty good last week. 7 for 123, and Osweiler was in for for that. So we will see how that game goes. I think I have to lean your way, because just doing the analysis tells me that Houston should win this. I do think that 4 points is probably right on it. I think it could be like a 14-10 type of game. Raiders are going to have to score with spectacular plays. It's something they can do with those receivers, but we'll see. I just can't quite figure out how they're going to win. If their defense had been better this year, I would be on their bandwagon. But obviously we saw times where they couldn't stop people. Khalil Mack is a tremendous player, and maybe he could step up and have a spectacular game here and put his stamp on it. But unless that happens, I'm not really sure that Connor Cook is going to survive. I think Romeo Crennel, keep in mind, is the guy on the other side of the ball dialing up a lot of this on Connor Cook. So I think that could be a really, really tough assignment for Connor Cook. I mean, Romeo Crennel, say what you will about his 10 years as a head coach, but as a defensive coordinator, the guy's been incredible for a long time.
Agreed. He's a top-notch defensive coordinator. He'll make life interesting on Cook. He'll give him some looks he hasn't seen before, try to make him guess what the pre-snap coverage is, and Cook will make some mistakes here. I expect this game, like I said, early on, I expect it to be boring. Both teams are going to run the ball a lot, try not to make that mistake. I think once Houston scores once or twice, Oakland will try and open it up some, and that's when it gets interesting. If Cook is a gunslinger, you know, if he's hot, this could be interesting. It really could. But there's too much going down. I mean, why did Oakland not show up last week? You know, that game was extremely important last week. It would have been a big win over Denver to get the bye this week. Not because, hey, they would win at the plate today, but because of giving an extra week of practice to Cook or give McGloin an extra week to get healthy. Instead, they didn't show up. They just didn't show up. So I just wonder if this team is just beaten down. You know, oh, we lost Carr. You know, in my mind, the air is out of the balloon.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they're all professional. It's not like we would suggest that they don't play hard, but I think when a team has their eyes on the Super Bowl and they know within an instant that is probably vanished, they're probably thinking, really, what are we playing for? Like, how are we going to win these games without
the guy? It's deflating, man. It's just deflating. It's human nature. Come on. You lost your best player, best chance to win, just went down the tubes after a long, you know, what did Bill Parcells say? You know, you lift all those weights, you run all those laps, and then this happens at the end of the season. It's a crusher.
Yeah, I mean, the only time in NFL history that we've really seen this happen where the backup comes in is the 1990 Giants when Jeff Hostetler took over for Phil Simms. He was able to do it. Now, somebody will argue, well, Trent Green was a starter in 99 for the Rams. Yeah, you're right. Kurt Warner came in, and he played 16 games, and he was lights out. And he was MVP, or MVP worthy. I can't remember if that's the year that he won. But in any event, this doesn't happen. People just don't take over at the end of the year and run through it, and you find a diamond in the rough. That just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen historically. If we look back the last 15 years and much further than that, there's only a few guys that win Super Bowls, George. There's only a few. It's Eli and Rodgers and Ben and Peyton, who's now retired, and Tom Brady. That's it. You throw Brad Johnson in there if you like and Drew Brees, but, I mean, everybody there except Brad Johnson is going to the Hall of Fame.
Agreed. I mean, listen, football is a game where you have to have a quarterback. You need it's quarterback controlled. I mean, I'm the Cowboy fan here. It's already been, no matter what happens in the playoffs, it's already been a good season for Dallas because they found a quarterback of the future that will now make them competitive. I'm not saying great, but competitive for the next decade. You need a quarterback in today's game. You lose one late. Very few teams have a backup quarterback which is going to lead them to win games. What, maybe a fourth of a league? And eight teams, even that's probably saying too much. That way you can honestly say the backup, you'll be fine. You know, the backup's a good veteran, you'll be fine. Very few teams have that. Especially in the salary cap area, it just doesn't happen.
So, and to my point, to elicit my fandom in this point that I'm about to make, I'm a Steelers fan. I'll never bash Landry Jones again because last week that comeback against the Browns in overtime save me a little bit of cash. I've told you, George, all year about my Steelers over 10.5 bet. Well, that touchdown pass to Kobe Hamilton got them to 11 wins and saved my bacon in this contest.
Ever a game where a team looked like, you know, we wouldn't mind losing this.
I mean, agreed.
Crowell fumbles inside the 5-yard line. Oh, you had to sit down there and eat a pizza, and they win that
That's
game.
It. It was over. All they had to do was kneel it and kick a field goal.
Right. Weird.
It was so weird. I couldn't believe what I was dealing with because the Steelers made this crazy play to go up, and then Griffin hits this big run, and then he fumbles it. And in overtime, they had the ball first and goal from like the 2, and they get pushed back several plays and have to kick the field goal. Then anyway, it comes down. It was a crazy game. Nobody cared basically except me. The Steelers were already locked into the 3 seed. It didn't matter. But in any event, I say all this. I'm not going to bash Landry Jones anymore. But all of my hopes for the Steelers to ever win a Super Bowl rest on Ben Roethlisberger. If he goes down, it's over, Johnny. Landry Jones can't get them to a Super Bowl. And if he got them there by happenstance, they're not going to win that game because he's going to be playing against Aaron Rodgers or whomever else. So, or Matt Ryan or your boy Dak Prescott. I'll give
that's generally how
we
judge games. You pick any two teams. All right, who's starting quarterback? It's the first thing you look at. Oh, you're going against Brady. Oh, you lost. You know, you go, Aaron, oh, you lost. Rodgers is going to beat you. You know, that's just the way it goes. You know, if you don't have a good starting quarterback, I don't want to control the game, throw the ball down the field, make the right calls at the line of scrimmage, you're not going to win in today's NFL. It's just all geared towards the passing game.
Yeah. So, Lions-Seahawks, we haven't talked about this game really at all. I think people will consider it to be a really tough task for the Lions to go into Seattle. I think if this game was on a neutral site or if it was in Detroit somehow, more people would be off the Seattle bandwagon because they've finished the season at 3-3. They are not playing that well. They toughed it out with the Niners last week. So, but Detroit obviously lost their last three, I believe their last three, maybe even their last four, was it? They definitely lost their last three games, I know that. And going into Seattle, where Seattle was 7-1, on the season. Yeah, they lost their last three, where Seattle was 7-1 on the season. I think it's just too tough of a task for a Lions team that, let's face it, does have flaws.
Detroit's been playing with fire all season long, right? Winning all those games late in the fourth quarter, and then we've seen, you know, it came back to bite them at the end. You know, they've got a bunch of injuries, too. No running game to speak of. What did Michael Bennett say about Zach Sennett? He's the best white running back in the league. That's great. Good luck winning with that. So they really don't have a running game. Their defense is average, maybe a tick above average at best. Darius Slay did return last week, so that's nice. I guess we're good. A good cornerback, Ziggy. They just have so many issues here. The only chance I really gave them against Seattle tonight was if their defensive line can make life incredibly difficult on Russell Wilson and that offense, which it could happen because we know the weakness on Seattle by far is that offensive line. It can be taken. You can take that Seattle offense all out of sync. It can happen. But I just don't know if Detroit has the personnel to do it. You throw in the fact that Stafford still has his finger problem, whereas accuracy, you can look up the numbers, since he suffered the injury, his accuracy has gone down about 8%, I believe it is. So he certainly is having problems there. But when you think of Detroit, who are you afraid of on offense? Really, who are you afraid of? Who's their playmaker? Who's their big guy? They don't have one.
Yeah, I mean, Golden Tate's had a really good season, but he's not the type of guy that scares you. And ironically, he's going up against a team where he used to play. So I think they know his mannerisms, his tendencies quite well. And I don't think, even with Earl Thomas being out, I think does impact Seattle's chances to win a Super Bowl. I don't think it impacts their chances immeasurably to win this game. So I do like Seattle here. The offense is perplexing to me. So up and down. I think it's a function of this offensive line being as bad as some of us anticipated it might be. But again, playing very uneven football as we head here into the most important weeks of the season. So a little bit there. So give me one guy from here, Seattle, Detroit. Who do you think has the best fantasy numbers in this game?
Well, listen, if I'm going to go on with Detroit side, I agree with you about Tate. I think Seattle knows what he's going to do, so they'll control him. I'm going to go Eric Ebron. I think with the way they play defense, you can get underneath passes here. So Ebron is someone I will like. No one in the running game here. Marvin Jones could have a decent game here, as he may not see a whole lot of Richard Sherman, but I'm not banking on Marvin Jones. How about Anquan Boldin? I think he could sneak into the end zone there, too. So that's the guy I would like for Detroit. Listen, I'm a Cowboy fan. I want Detroit to win this game because I'd much rather face Detroit than the Green Bay Giants winner. But I just don't see it happening.
Right. And the first game, give me your breakout star in that game, Raiders-Texans, which we expect to be relatively low scoring. But give me one guy that you like from a fantasy standpoint there.
This could take a while. No, I said Fedorowicz. He's the only guy. I think there'll be a lot of short passes here. So PPR, give me Fedorowicz. I think he'll catch a whole bunch of balls here, maybe six touches. Well, and look at Corey Parson. Look at a Dak Prescott just walks in the door here. So look at that. Fantasy executive who's extremely early. I'll go Fedorowicz, but I don't see much else happening.
So what was your prediction on that first game?
I'm going to go Raiders-Texans. I'm going to go 20-6 Houston.
20-6, so that's the under at 36.5. And Detroit, Seattle is a 44 total. So who do you have there?
That's funny. 44 total. My final score is 44, 27-17, Seattle.
All right, so you're going to push there. I'll come up with my predictions after the break. So we'll hit a break here. We'll come back. We'll talk about Miami-Pittsburgh and Giants-Green Bay. We'll work in the wide receivers a little bit later in the show. It's Mike and George all the way till 10 o'clock. Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning. Mike and George for the next 40 minutes or so. Talking about the NFL playoffs. We'll get to the Sunday games now where Miami goes up to cold, cold Pittsburgh to face the Pittsburgh Steelers, whom they beat earlier this season by a score of 30-15. It was the game in which Ben Roethlisberger got hurt. He ended up sitting out subsequent games for them. It was a sort of down period in the middle of the season for the Steelers where people thought it might go sideways. But ultimately, here they sit, the three seed in the AFC playoffs, and they're hosting a Miami team with a backup quarterback, a capable one in Matt Moore, who's played fairly well here in the two games that he's had to fill in. But this is the first time Ben Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell, and Antonio Brown have been healthy for a home playoff game, George. So what say you in the outcome and the outlook of this game?
This game should be somewhat, I think it's going to be fun. I think we know how Miami's going to try and play it. You know, run the ball to the Giants, see if we can have that big game again versus Pittsburgh. The problem for the Dolphins is Pittsburgh's just a different team at home. Why they have such vast home and road splits is beyond me for a veteran team. I don't get it. You know, if they were a young team, I can understand that. But Ben's been around forever. You know, Bell, he's not a kid. I mean, I don't understand why they're such a different on the home and road. So I sort of throw out the game in Miami. Yeah, I don't really care what happened. You mentioned Ben got hurt. Fine. It was a roller coaster. Things went downhill. I think what's going to happen here, Pittsburgh is going to be able to move the ball. Miami, I believe, set a record for their worst defensive team ever as far as yardage given up. You can run on them. You can throw on them. So Pittsburgh could really do whatever they want, which means I think it's I think what Miami's going to do is try and control the clock with Ajayi, but I think it's the wrong thing to do for this reason. You might control the clock, but unless you score on those drives, you're going to be down 14-3 before you know it. Because you know, I don't think Miami can stop Pittsburgh. I just don't think they can, not consistently. So, you know, that's a great philosophy, doing what the Cowboys do, keep the other team's offense off the field, but you have to score. And by score, I mean score touchdowns. And I just don't know if Miami can do that. And my biggest problem for Miami is, once you start to get down, Moore has to throw. He's a very good backup, but there's a reason he's a backup. He's gonna make some mistakes. And Pittsburgh's not a team. You know, their defense is so-so at best. They can be thrown on somewhat, but not. You know, they're not the Saints, the secondary. I think Matt Moore will make some mistakes.
Yeah, there's some issues there. Listen, the Steelers are built, ironically, the same way. I guess I shouldn't say it's ironically, but they're built at defense the same way they always are. They like their linebackers. They've got a bunch of, I mean, all four guys that they're playing with right now are number one draft picks. Their defensive line has issues. Cam Hayward's their best defensive lineman. He's been out for the season for a while now. Stephon Tuitt is coming back off of an injury. He claims to be healthy. They kept him out last week for these purposes. As you said, they can be gotten to a little bit in the secondary, but going back to your point about Miami, 6,100 yards given up. That probably is a franchise record. They were 29th in the league this year in yards given up. Rushing defense, which is crazy considering the personnel that they have.
Exactly.
They gave up 2,247 yards rushing. That was 30th in the league. They had the 28 most attempts against them, which is indicative of teams realizing that that's the way to beat them. They had the 24th most passing attempts, which means they were just giving up tons of plays. You can blame whomever you want, the players, the coaching staff, the scheme, which was done last year when they fired everybody. They gave up tons of plays. They couldn't get teams off the field on third down. And here they sit. I mean, they gave up 4.8 yards per carry, George, second worst in the league. They gave up 30 passing touchdowns, 25th in the league. And they're going into the hornet's nest. If there's one thing I can tell you about the Steelers, what you don't want to do is play them at home when Ben, Bell, and Brown are healthy. They don't lose those games. Dallas beat them incredibly. That was the thing that most impressed me about Dallas in that game, is that those three guys were healthy, they were in Pittsburgh, and Dallas won that game in spectacular fashion. But look what it took also to beat them. I mean, the Steelers came back on them, scored with a minute left, and it took spectacular plays on offense to get it done. But I say all that to say this is a very tough assignment, and that you got to throw out the 30-15. I'm with you.
Yeah, I don't think that game means all that much to me. In Miami, they played a great game, good for them. I think they're going to have a lot of issues here. I don't know why their defense isn't playing anywhere near what we think it should. They'll be without what their best cornerback is, and Byron Maxwell. I don't think he's playing. He's doubtful for the game, so he won't show up. I don't know who's stopping anybody. You're going to see a whole lot of Xavier Howard, and he's a rookie. Good luck there. They just released Jason Jones. I'd like to know why that happened. You know, they're big free agent signing on the defensive line. He's gone. Cameron Wake's had a great season. Ndamukong Suh is still great. Mario Williams has been a huge bust there. And they just have issues all over the place. You don't want to get into a high-scoring contest with Pittsburgh, especially in Pittsburgh. That's not going to work out well for Miami. I think a good season's coming. A nice season is coming to an end tomorrow.
Yeah, I read a tweet from Armando Salguero. He said that Mario Williams may have even played his last snap in Miami because
yes.
I don't think he's 100% healthy these days, and he's moving on. He's been a huge disappointment for them, unfortunately. I mean, Mario Williams might be at the end of his career. I'm not bashing the guy. I'm just saying he's not the player that he once was. So, very tough assignment for the Dolphins. That would be a stunner for me if the Steelers lost. I don't know what the chances would be in Kansas City next week anyway, but it would be a stunner to me if they lost. Who's the one guy that you would count? I mean, based on the statistics, it's hard for me to argue that anybody other than Le'Veon Bell will be the fantasy superstar in this game, but it could be another guy for you. Who do you think?
Oh, I think the Steelers are going to move the ball pretty well. I would start Bell, Brown, no problem. Darius Green still in concussion protocol. I don't think he's going to play tomorrow. A little surprising since it's been a couple of weeks there. Let you know, concussion's always iffy. Different players are... I guess heal quicker than others. I pretty much like all my Steelers.
This season. Second time for him this season, too, where he's dealing with it. So, I think listen, you're going to pay in DFS, you're going to pay for Roethlisberger, but he's certainly a guy that people are going to look towards. He's going to be the chalk play as opposed to a tournament pivot. But I have the Steelers here. I've been waffling on the score a little bit. I'm thinking 27-17, which brings it under, but I could see it being maybe even a wider gap than that.
I have it at 27-20, so I'm right there with you.
Actually, you know what? I did have it at 30-17. I'm sorry. So I have the Steelers covering that 10-point spread.
Yeah, I don't. I think Miami might get a late touchdown here to cover the spread.
It's 10.5, so that hook actually bothers you quite a bit if you're the type that looks at that type of stuff. So 30-17, I have the Steelers. George has the Dolphins covering, but losing this game, George sort of angling the backdoor cover there. So
exactly.
I
don't think the game's all that close.
With that 30-17 score, I do have the Steelers over. It's a 46 total. You at 27-20 also have them over. So Vegas kind of right on our numbers here. We will talk, we got time here. So we got Giants-Packers. I'll move over to that before we get out to the next break. But Giants-Packers, this is the marquee game of the weekend. I don't think anybody argues. I just wonder if some other game will surprise us. But as of right now, we've got two Super Bowl winning quarterbacks going up against one another. Eli, I think I read a stat the other day, Eli has beaten four Super Bowl winning quarterbacks in the playoffs because he's beaten Aaron Rodgers. He beat Tom Brady twice. And there's another one in there that I'm forgetting. I can't remember who else he beat in the playoffs that was a Super Bowl winning quarterback. It will come to me. But in any event, Eli has done this. Oh, Brett Favre. He beat Brett Favre. So he beat Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady twice. So he beat four Super Bowl winners, or rather, four games against Super Bowl winners in the playoffs. He's going for number five right here. So 44.5-point spread. Packers have moved up to a 5-point favorite. So the money has actually come in on the Packers, although it's been relatively stable. So who do you like? What do you think here, George? What's your outlook?
Well, I think it is the best game for me over the weekend, the one we're all looking forward to, last game tomorrow. I mean, we know what it comes down to, right? Giants is all about their defense. That defensive line can make life miserable for a quarterback. You know, and the Giants, can they score points? You know, they've been playing very conservative over the past month, not wanting Eli to make that mistake, which I always find it interesting when you're playing really against your quarterback, hoping he doesn't make the big turnover here, hoping that offensive line can somewhat stick together here. I think the problem with the Giants is this. I think that was a great game plan to work for most of these games, Detroit, Dallas. They knew they were going to control those teams. They weren't going to give up 20-plus points. Green Bay's going to score points. So I think you need to be very careful here about being, once again, too conservative and putting yourself behind. But I think they'll start out that way. Paul Perkins has been a nice little bonus for the Giants here, so I think they will get some sort of running game. And from the Packers, let anybody beat me but Odell Beckham. Okay? I want to cover. You can't take him out of the game, but you have to make sure he doesn't control the game. He doesn't make all these big plays. So that's what I want to do right now if I'm Green Bay. I want to make sure that he doesn't lose the game for me. Offensively, I think they'll move the ball somewhat, not at ease. The Giants want to make sure, Rodgers is dangerous when he gets outside of the pocket because he's very good to throw on the run and find those receivers get open late. All of a sudden, that's where the big plays come from.
He's so good. He's so elusive, and people can talk about athleticism and it got to have a mobile quarterback. No, you don't. You just need him to do what Aaron Rodgers does. You just need to be elusive. You need to be able to slip out of the pocket, avoid the rush a little bit. And, yeah, he does scramble for first downs. He is athletic. But the thing that I marvel at the most is his ability to slip through the pocket and that kind of vision, his sense of where the rush is coming from, and him creating secondary plays. Like Ben Roethlisberger, I'm a Steelers fan, is great at that, but it's in a much clunkier way, and it's because of his size and his sheer will to not go down that he does it. Aaron Rodgers does it without getting touched. It's incredible.
And for those wondering, game time tomorrow is going to be about 12 degrees, 11 degrees. And it's going to feel like, it's going to feel cold. That's what it's going to feel like. Okay? It's going to be very cold. But once again, no precipitation. They're not expecting that. The winds are fine, 7 miles an hour, so there won't be much of a wind chill there. It's going to feel about 2 degrees. I'll be very happy watching it in front of a fire. Am I done?
Yes. It's looking forward to being toasty warm in my home as well. So breakout fantasy guy in this game or fantasy star in this game. You sound like you're pointing towards Aaron Rodgers.
It's the obvious. I don't know if they're going to be stars on Green Bay. You know, I don't think they're gonna light it up. No. So I think the only way you get a star is if someone happens to catch two touchdowns. You know, that would, you know, that would be their star player. It's Davante Adams. He can hold on to the ball this week. Nelson. How about Jared Cook? Giants and all give up points of a tight end. I might go Jared Cook. Going to go off the board here on somebody. For the Giants, I'm going to go Paul Perkins. I think they're going to try and control the game on the ground. I think they can do some damage there. But this game, I don't think it's going to be all that high scoring.
Yeah, you're right about the Giants against tight ends. They are so good against wide receivers. I mean, their secondary has been great this year. So I think that is, you know, that it's going to be a tough one. This is an interesting game to me. I've thought about it. It's probably the game, despite the fact that I'm a Steelers fan, I've thought about this game probably more than any other because I was having a hard time getting a read on it. I just kept looking. Can Aaron Rodgers really lose this game at home? Is Eli going to be able to turn it on? I think that the Giants' defense is so good right now, and they get teams off the field on third down, third best in the league at it from an efficiency standpoint. I have a feeling that the Giants are going to at least keep this one tight. I think it's inside the 5-point spread. I think this one's going to come down to the last minute, and I could see the Giants pulling off another kind of game-winning field goal type of situation. I am going to pick the upset here. I think Eli plays well enough, and I think Odell can actually – you're right. I think they're going to try to prevent him from going off, and I don't think they're going to be able to do it. I think Odell's going to come up big this week. So he's a guy I'm kind of banking on in any tournaments that I'm in. I am going to use Odell this week. I think he can do enough damage to that Green Bay secondary that he's going to actually get the Giants to win. I don't want to hear, you know, I know he took this trip down to Miami, and some people are fired up over it. He had the day off. Miami's not a tough trip from New York, Georgia. Do you have an issue with what he did there?
No, but it was stupid.
It's not.
If you're going to do it, don't take the picture and put it on social media. You have to know better than that. I mean, no, I don't have a problem with it.
He doesn't, though. He's a social media guy. He just.
But then you have to, you know, you know media is going to be all over it. They're going to eat this stuff up. Just like when Tony Romo went down to Cabo San Lucas on his week off, they got all over him. And, no, does it matter for his play? No, it don't matter. But, you know, if anything goes wrong, then he drops a pass tomorrow. They're all going, oh, it's because he had a Mai Tai on Sunday night. It's stupid. But I have no problem with him going. I just would have been smarter about it and not played it up.
Yeah, I can see myself waffling on this game, but right now I'm going to go with the G-men in this game. I'll say it is – I think they're going to have to put up some points to do it, George.
That's the problem for me.
I think it's maybe like – this is going to be like – despite the fact that it's cold and we expect weather to potentially be some sort of factor.
I think that's good for the Giants.
I think they're going to have – it's going to have to be 27-24. Like, that's the way they're going to have to win. They're going to have to score a few touchdowns, and Odell probably is going to have to see two of them. So I'll go Giants 27-24, another last-second kind of heroic thing. Maybe it's Eli. Maybe it's Robbie Gould hitting a bomb of a kick. But that's kind of where I'm at. So I'll go over and the Giants with the cover on this one.
I'm going 24-20 Green Bay. I think it's going a little low scoring. I'll go with Green Bay at home, although I admit I say this with no confidence. I think this game is pretty close to 50-50. I like all my other picks of who I think is going to win. I'm pretty, I feel pretty good with them. This one I don't.
What'd you say, 24-20 on that one?
I'll give 24-20 Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, so that's the only one we disagree on. We like Houston, Seattle, and Pittsburgh, or we're going to disagree here.
I'm a Cowboy fan. I can't pick the Giants.
I know. It's tough, right? You know, if the Ravens were in the playoffs, I'd really struggle to pick them as well. But in any event, that's where we're at. I think we had some little bit of fun there. Would love to hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. Hit us up. I'm at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz. Happy to debate these games. And if you want to give us a call, feel free to give us a call for the rest of the day at 84-FNTSY. And we'll be here for the next half an hour. So it's Mike and George. We'll talk wide receivers after the break. Welcome back to Roto Experts in the Morning. We are on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike and George for the next 20 minutes or so. Broken down all the games. Feel free to give us your predictions if you like. Hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. George and I agreeing on all the games except New York and Green Bay. I'll take the Giants and the points with the upset going under. No, I'm over on that one, I believe, as well, because that over is 44.5, and I predicted over 50. So I'm over on that. George, you are right on the number. You're right on the number in every game. It's ridiculous. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I didn't check the over-unders either, by the way.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, so you were right on it. You had the Miami-Pittsburgh, you had 27-20, so that's 1 point over. I am 1 point over on that as well, actually, so we have a similar setup there. You said 24-20 on Giants-Green Bay. That's 44.5. You said 27-17 Lions-Seahawks. That's right exactly on the number. And you're way under on Raiders-Texans, which is 36.5. So we'll see how that plays out. Wanted to move over to the wide receiver position, which we talked about a little bit earlier. By the way, George, I'm going to hit you up with more trivia. I hope you're not mad at me.
Lucky
after
me.
This, but I'm having fun with it. So who led the league in pass targets?
Who led the league in pass targets?
Or give me the top three. Give me the top three in pass targets this season.
Anyone? Pass targets. I'll take Brown.
Brown was not in the top three, but he was fifth at 154 targets.
All right. So who? I don't think it'll be him. I'll have to go Beckham then.
Beckham is second, 169 targets. The guy that led the league is somebody that you and I talked about in the preseason and we thought could lead the league in pass targets.
That would have been Brown for me, but I don't know who.
Mike Evans led the league in pass targets, 173, just slightly above Odell Beckham. Julian Edelman came in third at 159. Edelman came on crazy strong at the end of the year, too. Really just a big season for him yet again.
And once you got
who led the league? That's right. So I mentioned earlier 25 pass catchers. I'm not going to make you name all these guys. 25 pass catchers had 1,000 yards. The two tight ends were Olsen and Kelsey, as I said. Do you know who led the league in receiving yards?
I'm probably going to go back to Evans.
It's not Mike Evans. It's T.Y. Hilton, 1,448 yards. Julio Jones second at 1,409. And that's Julio Jones. Injured Julio Jones. Basically injured.
Let you know what a year he had. That 1,400 yards, plus he didn't play, two of the last three games, really was absent for three.
Yeah, exactly.
Fans know it's probably ticked
basically
off
basically missed three games, 83 for 1,409 and six scores. I think people will be he's still a first-round pick next year. I wonder if people are just getting concerned because it's another toe injury. It's another foot injury. It's always been my only concern about Julio Jones. He's in a great offense now with a quarterback that he's all pro, George. He might win this MVP now. I was doubting it. Now that he got the all pro nod, I wonder if he's going to pull it off, Matt Ryan.
I think from what we're hearing, the odds are that he is going to win the MVP. And he's been my pick for weeks. You know, I love Tom Brady and all, but Matt Ryan's had a fantastic season. New England was 3-1 without Brady. There's no way Atlanta's anywhere near this damage without Matt Ryan.
That's right. I think that's fair to say. I've been thinking it was going to be Aaron Rodgers. I thought he caught some momentum at the end of the year that he was going to get voted in. I think it's tough to break into that club of MVPs, especially at the quarterback position. So I was thinking that people weren't going to vote Matt Ryan. Once I saw he got the all-pro nod, it gave me some hope that he could pull it off. Anyway, T.Y. Hilton was first, Julio Jones was second. I'm going to go down through all the 1,000-yard receivers, and some of them are going to stun you at the end. Mike Evans. Odell Beckham's third. Mike Evans. Antonio Brown with 1,284. Jordy Nelson, Brandon Cooks, Amari Cooper, Michael Thomas. Huge breakout star, I think that's fair to say. Breakout star at wide receiver this year is Michael Thomas, correct?
Absolutely. I think he's actually the number one there.
Yeah, 92 for 1,137 and nine scores. Probably the fantasy breakout star of the year. To your point earlier, yes, Zeke Elliott had an amazing season, but he was drafted in the first round. People had a lot of expectations. Michael Thomas, people like Jake Seeley, to his credit, was banging the Michael Thomas drum, but not everybody was on it. I didn't draft Michael Thomas in a couple of leagues that I could have, and I completely regret it. He was a lockdown guy. Jarvis Landry, gosh, he seemed disappointing at points during the year, but he ends up with 94 for 11, 36, and 4 scores. So Jarvis Landry was what he was for you PPR aficionados. Doug Baldwin, 94 catches for 11, 28, and 7 scores. Doug Baldwin coming up huge. And I was on the Doug Baldwin bandwagon. I thought he would bounce back with another big season, and he did. Julian Edelman, 98 catches for 11.06. Demaryius Thomas, 90 catches, 1,000 yards. Golden Tate, 1,000 yards. Sorry, George. Golden Tate came on strong enough to sort of quell your fears about him. He has 8 catches less than last year, but 1,000-yard season, pretty good for Golden Tate.
Once again, 1,000 yards, only 60 yards a game. That's still not great. You need to be, do more than this day and age. This way, especially in the passing day and age.
I suppose. But still, he is in there. He's in the top 20 in yardage. Terrell Williams, 69 for 1059 and 7 scores. I think, obviously, another breakout star. Took advantage of his shot. Keenan Allen was out. Terrell Williams got that shot, and he made it up big time. How about Pierre Garçon, 79 catches for 1,041 yards. Emmanuel Sanders, 79 catches for 1,032 yards. Larry Fitzgerald. Mike Wallace, 72 catches, 1,000. Excuse me.
Well, you even mentioned a Ravens player, start coughing.
Exactly right. 72 catches for 1,017 yards. So Mike Wallace might surprise some people. Terrell Pryor, another breakout guy. He has 1,007. DeSean Jackson, 1,005 yards. So that's 2 Washington wide receivers with 1,000 yards. Michael Crabtree just got over that hump at 1,003 yards. And the last guy, and I never would have guessed that he had 1,000 yards this year, Kenny Britt. Kenny Britt with 1,002 receiving yards.
That's a pretty impressive look. You know, you might think there actually would be more in this day and age, though. The end of being a passing league, it's a quarterback-friendly league. Defense really can't do anything anymore. So I don't know how impressed I am with that list. I'm certainly impressed with Kenny Britt. And you mentioned, Pierre Garçon. Really, he carried a couple of leagues, a couple of teams down the stretch here to victories here. He could be gone next year. He wants to get paid. You know, DeSean Jackson might go to Philadelphia. We've been hearing about that for a month. What the Washington?
They will absolutely lose one of those guys. I think they might too.
You got Crowder. You got Doxson. You may have to put that money someplace else.
I mean, Doxson is a zero this year, though. Do they even know what they have? I mean, they have to have some faith, but...
But they got to pay Cousins a small fortune. Even if they franchise him, that's a small fortune to pay him.
Yeah, I think they will lose both, and it will be crazy because they will lose basically 135 catches and 2,045 yards of production, not to mention the... 7 touchdowns that goes with it. So clearly that's going to be a lot to lose. Pierre Garçon is 29 or 30, I believe. You know what the funny thing about Kenny Britt is? It's like he's lived two lives. I was looking this up because when I saw this list, saw he had 1,000 yards, I was like, wow, that's kind of crazy. Towards the end of his career, how old would you guess Kenny Britt is?
28.
Wow, right on the number. See, ooh, I thought he was a little bit older than that. Yeah, right on the number. So I thought he was a little older than that. I thought he might be on the wrong side of 30. But Kenny Britt, you know, he had a massive injury early in his career, and it impacted him in some ways. But obviously he went to the least efficient offense in the league. And then somehow this year he ends up with 1,000 yards. So Kenny Britt as wide receiver 3 this year was a home run. Here he sits. You know, I wonder what that will look like next year. You're right. I think Washington is the team that's going to be really difficult to figure out. I think Crowder is going to be a guy that you can sort of pencil in to pick up some of those numbers next year. But what is Josh Doxson? Can Jordan Reed even get through any kind of season unscathed? It hasn't happened yet. So a lot of, again, the theme of the day is moving parts. Kirk Cousins is going to get a lot of money, and they're going to have to figure out where they can get the money elsewhere because they still need to fix parts of that defense. So I thought that was a fun little exercise with the wide receivers. We're going to come back, wrap it up, talk about a few other things related to the playoff games today. It's Mike and George taking you all the way till 10. Mike and George, final segment. Hope we've had a little bit of fun today, a little bit of year in review. I think we did okay this year, George. I think we got some things right, got some things wrong overall. Hopefully, I think we gave some people some good advice on football as we transition. We'll continue to do, by the way, playoff games and you know, our fantasy takes on the playoff games these next couple of weeks. We'll be back again tomorrow to talk, to recap yesterday, today's games, as well as talk about these games again in a little bit more in depth, but clearly talking about some other sports as well. George, I'll give you my 1 minute on hockey. I watched the World Juniors finals the other night, USA-Canada, and it was a riveting game. Went to shootouts. Did you catch any of that? I know you're a hockey guy, so I wanted to sort of relate to you on hockey terms.
Yeah, I did catch it. Great tournament. A lot of fun. Those will be NHLers soon. People are complaining that it went to a shootout to decide a championship. Not ideal, but that's what they do in the international tournament. So really stop complaining. Get over it. And good for the Team USA.
Yeah, it was nice. Nice win. I follow a little bit of college hockey. I'm a BC grad, so BC is obviously like a college hockey powerhouse. And we had three guys on the U.S. team: Colin White, one of the goalies, Wohl, and I'm missing somebody, Casey Fitzgerald. So a few guys there. BC's biggest rival, BU, had like six players on the USA team and another player on Canada. So a lot of college hockey kids in there. Sports a lot of fun as it gets to the playoffs. But in any event, it was good stuff. Really exciting game. I got somebody alerted me to how the game was going in the third period, and I tuned in, watched the rest of the third, and then the entire overtime and the shootout. So exciting stuff there. And George is sort of our senior hockey writer on rotoexperts.com. Anything related to fantasy hockey, you can go to rotoexperts.com and find George's content. So one thing I wanted to do is update the polls, and I asked about an hour ago, which running back will see the biggest drop-off next season? I asked Zeke Elliott, Le'Veon Bell, DeMarco Murray, and David Johnson, and George, no surprise. An overwhelming victor is DeMarco Murray, 75%. I think the only thing I'm surprised about in this poll is that the 3% to Le'Veon Bell. So it seems like people are all in on him or have no fears regarding a drop-off for him next season. I always just get worried about suspensions and injuries and all that kind of stuff for him. But his workload isn't to be denied, right?
I think with Bell, y'all, I'm worried about two things. One would be where he ends up. I think it'll be Pittsburgh, but you never know these things for sure. And two is, remember, he had a choice. You know, I always find this amazing, about a shorter suspension or what level of the program did he want to be in. And he chose the level rather than the shorter suspension. That tells me that he's not so sure he's not going to be doing this again. Or that he won't get caught again. That will always worry me about Le'Veon Bell. So I don't know if this is the last suspension we'll ever see from him. That being said, if I'm drafting tonight, tomorrow, I'm probably taking Bell second overall.
Yep. So there you go. And David Johnson won, right?
Yeah, Johnson still won for me. It's only that knee injury, which you thought was brutal, was just a meniscus. He'll be fine.
Yeah. Killed me in DFS that weekend, but I still had a good week. So I had David Johnson literally in every DFS lineup in week 17, and it's my fault for not diversifying, but I was all in, and he got hurt. So that all happened. So, and which underdog has the best chance to win their game was the other one. Raiders, Lions, Dolphins, Giants. George, who do you think won that poll?
It has to be the Giants. I think that's the only underdog I would even give a small chance to.
Yeah, 52% to the Giants. What I really wanted to see out of this poll, was the Raiders and how much support they would garner. And there's a little bit there. 24% say the Raiders have the best chance to win their game.
Hell, Chacha still thinks they're going to win.
Yeah, 15% to the Lions, 9% to the Dolphins. So Dolphins are being written off by most people. But, you know, this is a poll. You're weighing other options. So maybe people give them more of a chance than this poll suggests. But in any event, the Giants win that poll handily. So we've given our predictions. I'll review those again. I'll do mine first. I have Houston 19-13. Over Oakland, that's under the total of 36.5. I have 23-16 Seattle over Detroit. That is under the 44 total. Is that right? Yeah, that's 39. So I have Pittsburgh 30-17 over Miami. That's over by a point or a half a point. And I have New York beating Green Bay, and that's over. That's 27-24. So you're at 51 there. I believe that total is 44.5. So George goes Houston 20-6. He has Seattle over Detroit 27-17. He pushes on that number. He's under on the first game. He has 27-20 Pittsburgh over Miami. That's right on the number, I believe. I'm going to double check that. No, that's under. And then he's got 24-20 Green Bay over the Giants, which is technically under, even though it's right on the number. And George and I disagree on the Giants and Green Bay, but I think we would both admit we won't be surprised by either outcome.
No, that's the best game of the day for me. It's a game I want to see probably the most. I think it'll be the closest. Wouldn't shock me if the Giants pulled off. I think they have a very good defense. They might be able to give Aaron Rodgers fits. If they can keep him in the pocket, not make the plays with his legs, not make plays outside the pocket where he finds those receivers breaking open late, I think the Giants will have a better-than-average shot. Eli can't make mistakes.
So do you have any one-and-done contest going on, any playoff lineups that you've put in as of yet?
I do have one-and-done contest. I have not put a playoff lineup in yet. I will do that when I go home.
So, okay, so we'll review those with you tomorrow.
Which, with the snow, might be around tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll review those with you tomorrow and tell you how we did. I haven't put my lineups in yet, so I apologize for not doing that. I can tell you that I have a DFS lineup that I need to tinker with quite a bit more. But I think, you know, some of the cheap guys that we're looking at, like George mentioned earlier, is C.J. Fedorowicz. George mentioned Jared Cook, so you're trying to get in a little bit cheaper there. Let me see if I can see my one lineup that I entered for DraftKings. Yeah, I had Roethlisberger. I have Jay Ajayi in there. I have Latavius Murray in there. I have Geronimo Allison, Antonio Brown, and Sterling Shepard. I have Jesse James at tight end, Doug Baldwin in the flex, and the Raiders D. Pricing becomes a huge issue here because it's going to be, as George likes to say, stars and scrubs when it comes to that. I'm going to tinker with this lineup, so don't follow that as a piece of advice. I'm probably throwing Le'Veon Bell in there and getting Antonio Brown out, just sort of based on the Dolphins against the run and all the numbers that we went over earlier, 4.8 yards per carry. They give up so many plays. They give up so much yardage. I think Le'Veon Bell is the one lockdown guy that you need to have in your DFS contests this weekend. We keep seeing today. Clearly, we realize that two of the games are tomorrow. So that's kind of where I'm at. We'll review that, see how I did in whatever tournament or contest that I'm in. George, it's been a good show, buddy. I appreciate your input. I appreciate you taking my trivia questions in stride.
Not a problem. I was going to say good luck to your Steelers, but I guess I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll talk in the morning. We're here tomorrow from 8 to 10. I let you go out on a win, by the way. You got Kenny Britt's age, so I didn't ask you another trivia question. I'll leave it at that. You want to go out on making that shot, you know? Like before you leave the gym, you just want to hit that last shot.
Thank you so much. You're the best, Mike.
Yeah. All right, George. Good stuff. Thanks for listening, folks. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. 8 to 10, Roto Experts in the Morning. Coming up next, it's Corey Parson. It's Tony Cicada. We got NFL Fantasy Game Day. They're going from 10 to 12. Talk to you tomorrow, folks. Thanks for listening.